Hey there, welcome to Cocktails and Cliterature, the podcast that's all about bringing the heat. It's time to talk about the smuttiest and spiciest books in town, and trust me, we're not holding back anything. I'm your host, Constance, and together we're diving headfirst into a world of litlicious pleasure where we celebrate the power of our inner goddesses and embrace the magic of our curves. Get ready to slay those pages, ladies, because this ain't your grandma's book club, okay? We've got the inside scoop you don't want to miss. This is girl talk at its finest. So gather your bestie, tune in, and let's go on a wild, sassy, and unapologetic ride together. Welcome, everyone, back to Cocktails and Cliterature. Today, we have the one and only Zio Axelrod, USA Today bestselling author of contemporary fiction and romance. But hold on, because Zio's not just an author. She is also an artist herself who's always cooking up something special for the readers. So welcome, Zio.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited to have you here and to just get into everything that you're doing. There's so many ways to go with this conversation. And so I'm excited to see what happens. So how are you today?
I'm good. Like, I'm still recovering from this last leg of touring. I did 8 time zones in a week or something like that. Cause I went from California to the East Coast and then to Paris and then back to the East Coast. It's like, my body has no idea what time of day or day it is.
Well, I'm glad you made it regardless of the time change. I know that's hard to get used to when you've been traveling.
Yeah. It's weird. I mean, I used to do it all the time when I was touring for music, but I think I was away for longer chunks. Like, these like quick trips are really doing me in. Like, it was, you know, I could go somewhere for a couple of weeks or a month. That was much better than this.
Yeah. Why don't you tell us about your new release, Girls with Bad Reputations? I love that title. And, you know, this is the second book in your Lily series featuring the all-girl rock band. So yeah, tell us more about that and your inspiration behind it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Like you said, it's the second book in the series. The series is about an all-female rock band called The Lilies. The first book you kind of met the band and you met their new guitarist, Tony, and sort of an intro into that world. And then in book two, you're kind of dropped right in that, you know, the band is on the road for their first tour. They're dealing with label intrigue and like old nemesis and journalists, you know, bad journalism and like all kinds of stuff. But they're also gelling as a band. And then next to that story of the band's journey is this love story between Kayla, the drummer, and the bus driver, Ty, who he's one of my favorite characters I've ever written. So you have this beautiful little friends to lovers romance happening alongside the journey of the band.
Well, I loved it. I can't wait for all of the listeners to get a chance to read your book, Girls with Bad Reputations. Now, speaking of bad reputations, I have a reputation of fun rapid fire questions. How do you feel about that?
Sounds good. I have my iced coffee with a little splash of something in there. So I have my drink ready.
Wait a minute. We talked about something completely different yesterday.
I was going to do my whiskey, but I thought, you know, it's early for me. So I just put a little bit of whiskey in my coffee here. So, yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, I have my little whiskey neat in my little
glass. Oh, nice. So, what are you drinking? Yeah.
You know, I don't remember. My husband has a lot of different things. And so I was just like, whiskey, and I just poured it.
Okay. All right. I have a little bit of Woodford Reserve in mine.
So let's take a quick little sip before we get started.
Okay. Here we go.
Cheers.
Oh, I put a lot in there.
Whoa.
Woo. Wow. All right.
Oh my God. I know, because it's not even 12 yet. I was trying to like always have my interviews like after 12, just because I don't want to be drinking like super early. But yeah, here we are. So we're going to get into it.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
There you go. All right. Our game is called Sip and Strip. And so I ask you a question, you take a sip and you answer it.
No. Let me get this drink closer.
Yeah, there you go. All right. So the first one is the last book you read that got you nice and excited and ready to get it on.
Ooh, wow. The last book I read. It was like a novel novella sort of thing that I read back to back from Sierra Simone. I don't know if you're familiar with Sierra Simone.
Yes.
Yeah. So she had Salt Kiss. And then I think it was it Salt in the Wound was the novella? Yes. I'm trying to remember the title. Sierra has just an amazing way of writing like erotic romance. That just it's so poetic, but at the same time like really hot. You know,
so hot and dirty. Like
But like my favorite series of hers is still the pre-series, and my favorite book in that series.
About that. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. My favorite book in that series is Saint. And I think it's because Saint is, first of all, it's one of the best depictions of depression I've ever seen on the page. But also the relationship, the tension between the two of them is just so palpable. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so, you know, they're going to end up together, but you don't know how or when or what, how they're going to, you know, like, she's just so good. So good at that. So
she she's really good at that. And she's a little freaky because she came on the show and I was asking her all kinds of questions. And she had a lap dance by a stripper named Lily.
Wow. No, I love Sierra. Like, yeah, the first one, she's one of the few authors that I've fangirled over. And it was when we first met, it was right after Priest came out, like a month or so after Priest came out, we were at an event together and we were talking for like 10 minutes about something completely different. And we were like, oh my gosh, we should really follow each other on social media. And I pulled out my phone to like take down her info and she had a little nameplate on the table, but it was her real name. So I start putting that in. She's like, oh, no, I don't write under that. I write under Sierra Simone. And literally everything that was in my hands hit the floor, like phone, bag, like everything. And I was like, you're a Priest for Sierra Simone? She's like, you read Priest? And I was like, oh, my God. We were like, oh, my God. It was like a Spider-Man gift. So, yeah, I've loved everything she's written.
Okay. What's your favorite spicy trope?
My favorite spicy trope? Well, I love enemies to lovers because I came from the fanfic world, right? Oh, I forgot my drink. I come from the fanfiction world and we had something in there called unresolved sexual tension, UST. And with the enemies to lovers trope, you can draw that out. You can tease and edge and like do everything, you know, they like really think they hate each other, but there's so much like sexual tension right underneath that. I absolutely adore it. And then once that dam breaks, like it really breaks, you know, like one of my favorite series that deals with that is the Beautiful Bastard series from Christina Lauren.
I have not read that. Is good?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Read Beautiful Bastard. Like it's Office Place, enemies to lovers, like in the stairwell. Like it's just yeah.
Are they fucking in the stairwell or are they just, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, ooh. No,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah. I feel like I might have read a book by, it's a duo, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think I read a book by them before, but it wasn't super spicy. So
yeah, their most recent stuff isn't as spicy as their early work, which I find with a lot of the authors that I've known for a long time. I think the mainstream palette change, or they, you know, just wanted to like reach as many audience, you know, readers as possible.
Yeah.
But if you go to their early work, that series, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because I read romance to completely escape from real world and I just want to dig in and like have people just go at it. You know, I do want a story. I do want a good story, good plot, you know, some great development, character development, but I need them to get it on. Like,
yeah, I hear you.
All right. So what is one of the plot twists that, you know, you wrote that surprised you?
Ooh, a plot twist that I wrote that surprised me. Let me think. There's one in the Lily series that I'm writing. In book one, there was a relationship between Seb, the manager of the band, Lily, the lead singer of the band, and their former guitarist, Candy. And it's never really explicitly said what happened between the three of them. And even in book two, like I'm a pantser, I don't plot, right? So like whatever the characters tell me to write, that's what I write. Okay. And so I don't know what's happening until they tell me what's happening. And Lily's been really tight-lipped about it. Seb is kind of clueless. So I have a feeling that she's telling me now what happened between the three of them and why she was so heartbroken when, you know, everything went down in book one. So yeah, so I don't want to say too much about it, but people have already guessed at some of the things. I'm like, I don't know. They haven't told me yet, but yeah, they, there might be some
a little throuple romance happening over there. Maybe.
Yeah.
Okay. I gotta read that because I want some of those scenes. I gotta have it. All right. Okay. Being a fangirl yourself, have you ever incorporated any of your own personal fantasies into your novels?
That's a good question. I think, and it's a shame because it's not available right now. I have a book that's out of print, but the first novel I released, or the first duet, Falling Stars and Starlight, there's a couple of scenes in there where I'm like, wow, this is really pushing the envelope. But I had no intention of publishing it because I wasn't an author at the time. I was just writing for fun. It takes place behind the scenes of a television show. And the lead actor is married. He's in this really like toxic Hollywood marriage. And the lead actress is this like 10, 12 years younger than him, sort of like up and coming. Like she's like really rising star actress. And when they meet, there's like instant chemistry and they're playing like lovers on their TV show. They clearly want to be together, but they can't for various reasons. But whenever they have these scenes together, things get out of hand. And so like there's one scene when they're shooting and like, you know, they both reach climax during the shoot and have to hide it from the people with the cameras and the boom mic and everything.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And there's another scene when they're not together. Like they don't get together until much later in the book, but like they have these like on and off moments where they're like in character, quote unquote, you know? But there's a scene when she's away shooting a film and she's dancing with this other actor who really wants, like he wants to date her or whatever. And they're like drinking and they're dancing. And she's just had like a fight with the guy, like our main guy. And so she's like feeling sort of defiant and like, I'm just going to find my own joy. So she's dancing with this other guy and they're dancing to the song called Closer from Nine Inch Nails. I don't know if you know that song.
No, I don't.
Well, the main tag in the song is I want to fuck you like an animal.
Okay, Dio, you just go in.
And so they're dancing and he's got his thigh between her legs and she, you know, she gets off while they're dancing on the dance floor. So there's a couple of moments in there that probably came from.
Has it ever
your face? yeah. So those were two. I'll send you like a PDF or something if you want to read.
Yes,
the book,
please do. That's never happened to me, but now I'm like, next time my husband and I go out, I'm gonna be like, let's go dancing.
Yeah. That's one of those things. Like I know I've been around people where that probably has happened. You know, like you know, uh-huh. You go out clubbing. That's probably happened around me, but it's never happened to me. So I wrote that in the book.
Okay.
And I would just thought, like, how crazy would it be if you're, because shooting intimate scenes is really very unsexy, mm-hmm. right? Because they're stopping you. There's so many angles and there's somebody in your face and sweaty dudes, armpits with the mic boom. But, you know, I tried to like to put a little fantasy in there. Like, yeah, they're just going to let them go until they hit cut. So they really go.
I love it. Your imagination is wild. And that's why you're an author. Because I would never think about that, but I don't understand how they couldn't, like how anyone, like if you're both attractive and you're getting close, like your body kind of responds sometimes to things outside.
Yeah.
I mean,
even when you're shooting scenes like that, especially for men, like it's hard not to have a physical response.
Yeah. It's probably easy for women to like not be.
Yeah. One of the scenes in the book, before that scene, there's like they have their first, I think, kiss or something. And they're both so like hot and bothered about it. They both go back to their trailers during the break and there's like a mutual masturbation scene, but neither of them knows that the other one is doing it at the same time. So.
Oh my goodness. I like that too. After this, I might need like a little hot shower. My husband works from home and he's in a meeting, but you know, I don't know. Might need to add the light. Okay. Yes, let's sip.
Take a sip.
Okay. If you were stranded on a beach with one of your sexy characters, who would it be and why? Is it Ty?
It might be Duff from my book, The Callum. Because one, he's Scottish, so he's got this lovely accent. But also, he's one of the few, like, true bad boys that I've written. Because I used to say that I write beta in the streets, alpha in the sheets characters, you know. But he is. I like writing cinnamon roll heroes, but Duff is not a cinnamon roll hero. He's an alpha through and through.
He's a bad boy.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, he is a bad boy. Yeah.
I mean, bad boys, you know, get you the wettest sometimes. I don't know what it is. It's the danger.
It's the danger, that forbidden aspect, whatever.
Yeah, that forbidden, the taboo. Yeah. How are you? Do you love taboo?
I do. I when I first read Priest, I hate read the book because I thought, oh, this is such a silly premise. Like, who would make this work? And of course, it was perfect. And then I went back and read it again. So that broke my seal on like reading stuff that I thought that I think is taboo. Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, because there's the altar scene, right? Like, you're just like, oh my gosh, who would write that? But
yes, you know. I was shocked with that one, and him being a priest and just going for it.
The anointing oil. I mean, come on.
yes, the holy water. Like, you know? Really? Confessionals. Yeah. They're just doing the most. I was asking her about the strippers. Because he went into a strip club, a priest in a strip club.
Yeah, yeah. Have you read Porn Star that she wrote with Laurelin? I think Laurelin.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. Sierra goes there.
Oh, man. Okay. Yeah. So that was it for our game. I need to stop saying it's rapid fire because it's never. Because I always want to ask. I always want to put myself in there. Anyway.
It's good. It's
cheers.
All cheers. Mix that up a bit.
All right. So as an author, as a musician, a singer, what came first for you?
Yeah. Yeah. I started recording really when I was really young. My family is basically in the music business. So I grew up around music. It was just kind of something we all did. So I went to theater first. And then I kept getting cast in musical theater because of my background. And I was like, I want to do Shakespeare, damn it. But so it was hard to, like, you know, break out into classical theater because everyone just like, oh, you sing, you dance. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Musical. And then when I got out of college, I moved to London for a bit and tried to break into acting over there. And they were like, you're American. Like, you Americans can't act, basically, is what they said. And I was like, wow, okay. So again, ended up back in music. And then when I moved back here, I started a band. So that was what I was doing when I started writing fiction. I was on the road in Portugal, coming back late from a gig and couldn't sleep. And, you know, just started dabbling on my blog and wrote a couple hundred words. And my 30 followers were like, oh, that's great. Write some more. And that's what Falling Stars came from. That big thing I was talking about earlier came from that. So I wrote like, I think 200,000 words over 9 months. And then, yeah, on my blog. And then people were asking if they could buy it somewhere. And I was like, why would you buy something you just read for free? You know, like, I didn't get it. Yeah.
When
so then
did
a friend,
you get it?
Well, it was when a friend of mine said, you should do something with this. Like, people really liked it. It went viral for a bit on Twitter and stuff. And she was like, you know, you should figure out how to publish this. And instead of publishing that, I wrote The Callum. Just to see the process of writing a book and releasing it and all that stuff. And I didn't really say anything to anyone. And then I told like one author that I had met and they told another author. And the next thing I knew, I was on everyone's blog and everyone's talking about it and everyone's sharing it. And it got reviewed in USA Today and all this other stuff. And I was like, oh, this is a thing. So, kind of took off from there.
That's very unexpected, right? You weren't expecting any of that to happen, but you know, fate comes in there and just, you know, it is what it is. And all of a sudden, like, USA Today best-selling author. Like, how exciting is that?
Yeah, it was cool. Life happens, right? And I thought, oh, I'll do this on the side and I'll just continue the music. And then there was sort of like a mini recession in Europe. Then I ended up staying home for a year just to regroup and books took over and that was it.
So do you still play or is it all about the writing at this point?
Well, I had stopped for a bit. And then when I did the deal for the Lily series, I was like, you know, I really want to do music for this. And I want to do like all this other stuff. And they were like, yeah, go for it. So I started recording and writing stuff for the Lilies right before the pandemic. And we everything got derailed. So we released, I think, two songs, one original, one cover. We just, the next single is coming out next Friday, actually, on the 19th. And yeah, we're going back in the studio to finish their whole, because I want to do the whole album of the Lilies by the time Lily's book comes out.
Right now you are the Lilies. When you were writing, like, you know, the instruments and how they're playing, when Kayla was in the store and she started playing the drums, and that was a funny scene because that guy was like, he did not think a woman would be playing the drums. She made sure to put him in his place, but in the sweetest way. But yeah,
yeah, so that was directly out of my life.
Was it really?
Yeah, I've had that every time I've gone into a music store with my husband, because my husband is, you know, 6'4". He looks like a rock star. They just start talking to him, and he's like, I don't know what you're talking about, dude. Like, I don't like her. He just points at me, and they look at me like, oh, yeah. So yeah, every single time. Every time.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of misogyny. Some of it just like subliminal misogyny. Like, they don't even realize they're doing it, you know, in music, but particularly in rock music.
So why rock music for you? Because I did a little research after we talked yesterday, and I found out that a Black woman is the godmother of rock and roll. She started it all. And she lived a very rock and roll lifestyle.
She did.
She really did. She was like bisexual. She was getting it. She was just all over the place. So Rosetta, I keep saying
Sister
her last
Rosetta name. Thorpe. Yeah. Rosetta Thorpe. She was a godmother. And a lot of, it's weird. Like, right now there's this conversation around Beyonce's new album being country, whether or not it's country or not. And I try to stay out of a lot of music discussions. I feel weird sometimes putting my two cents in there, but I posted something on my Facebook last night, too late, about it, because I don't really like the purity of music genres. Like, this is pure rock or this is pure country. Like, all of them borrow from the same source.
Yes.
And the source is, you know, Black field songs, Black blues, Black folk music,
spirituals,
you know, it all, like all of it, blues, country, rock, all comes from there. And so, you know, she was a pioneering guitarist. You know, there are a lot of guitarists that learn from watching her, White and Black and everything in between. And, you know, when you think about rock and roll, you don't think about Black women, but we had Tina Turner, we had Grace Jones.
That's true.
You know what I mean? We have her now, you know, even though she's an R&B artist, her guitar, you know, she's a rock guitarist. So for me, I grew up around R&B and soul. And, you know, like that's my family's gospel. That's my family's legacy. But I discovered rock music around 11 or 12.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was flipping stations, you know, and listening to the radio. And I think I heard, it may have been a Led Zeppelin song, but it was very like groovy. And I was like, what is this? But it had like this growling vocals and this like amazing storyline. And I was like, what is that? What is happening? And that was it. That was like, it just grabbed me by the throat and never let go. And there's so much storytelling. So I really love it.
And what instrument is like your number one go-to?
I'm a rhythm person. So bass and drums is like, even when I'm songwriting, those are the first two things that come to me aside from melody. Like, I'll hear the rhythm and I'll hear the bass line before anything else. So when I'm recording demos for my band, I put the drums down first and then the bass line, and then I'll do melody, and then I'll throw in the guitars and whatever else is in there.
Pretty cool. I don't play any instruments. I did buy a guitar. I kept talking about it. And my husband was like, you keep talking about, you want to learn how to play the guitar. So he got me like some music lessons, and he was like, I want you to like go to your lessons and see if you really like it and if you really
want
it. And so I took the classes and I was like, this, I want to learn how to play the acoustic guitar.
Awesome. So, I was going to ask if it was acoustic or electric, because acoustic's a bit harder because you really need to build up the calluses on the tips of your fingers and it hurts for a long time.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. The electric's a little easier because the strings are thinner, so it's not as hard, but
Yeah. So it's in the closet collecting dust.
That's funny.
I'm like looking at it right now. I will pick it up at some point and get back to it. But since I started podcasting, this has kind of been my like focus right now. Mm-hmm. I graduated with a communications degree. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, I want to go into broadcasting and, you know, be a newscaster and like all these things. And then I did an internship and I was like, oh, no. I don't like flowers. I don't like none of this stuff. This is not going to work for me. But then I had a whole bunch of transitional things happen in my life and I found myself with a lot of time and I went down the rabbit hole of reading. I've always been a reader, but mm-hmm. You know, when you got a lot of time, you're like, okay, I'm going to dive in these books even more. And so right. I want to talk about them. And so here I am. Yeah.
What was your gateway book?
Oh, do you remember? Ooh, that's a good question. Girl, that's hard. I love so many books. I would say romantasy was kind of one of the things that drew me back in, but spicy romantasy. So mm-hmm. it would have been like, maybe was it From Blood and Ash? It might've been Laura Thalassa.
Oh, Laura Thalassa.
Yeah, like Four Horsemen.
Yeah.
That's what like pulled me in. And then I was just like reading anything and everything. And then I went down the contemporary spice. And then mm-hmm. that's where like, you know, the Sierra Simones come in, like you come in, like, you know, I like it when there's a woman that's like very empowered and finding her voice. And so I like stories, whether it be contemporary like yours or a romanticy like that. I like that progression. So at the end, it's like, yeah, I know who I am.
That's what
I like. I think
that's exactly why I write the Lily series, because I've read a lot of rock romance and it's some great stuff, but very rarely have I seen, if ever, I can't even think to name one where the women are the rock stars, you know, but these women are incredibly proficient at what they do, musicians, singer, whatever it is, and they know that they're good, you know, so they're at the center of everything. Yeah,
I love that about your story. Absolutely. Because, you know, it just with rock music, it's so, I don't want to say it's hard, but it's aggressive in a sense mm-hmm. of where it's like, you know, they're getting in there and it's not
very in your face.
Yeah, it's very in your face. It's loud. It's powerful. I never read a rock star romance until I read yours.
Oh, wow. Oh, gosh. Yeah. You got to read Nalini Singh or Kristen Callahan. Like, there's some amazing series out there, mm-hmm, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, the two songs that are on, there's two songs on Spotify already.
Okay.
The third single, which is a cover, comes out on Friday, the 19th. Like, it's very much a Kayla song.
Kayla finding her voice and speaking out about her authentic self with her parents and accepting that. And then Ty, you know, being accused of something he didn't do, mm-hmm. and how that just flipped his life upside down. What is it that made you decide to incorporate all those different aspects to the story?
I love found family. The found family trope is like one of my favorites. It's in almost all of my books. And when you're in music, especially in a band, that becomes your family, your second, sometimes first family. I don't know. I think there are a lot of communities when you find those people that speak the same language, you kind of bond with them. And the people who don't speak that language, they don't quite connect with you on the same level, mm-hmm. you know, so there's a bit of that. But with Kayla and Ty, they both meet when each of them is at a crossroads in their lives. Very different crossroads, but parallel. Like you said, Kayla is dealing with, she's kind of living two lives. You know, she's mm-hmm. keeping secrets from her family, keeping secrets from her band, and she knows who she wants to be, but she still hasn't given herself permission to be that person because she's been told her whole life that she needs to be someone else. And so she's like, she thinks she's being defiant, but then when push comes to shove, she's kind of like, oh, maybe I need to just shut this down and go back to where it's safe. And poor Ty, like he's just humming along, overcoming obstacles that he already has in his life and his wrench is thrown into his path. And a lot of us who are from marginalized communities, especially like brown and black men in this country, who face discrimination and even microaggressions every day, it can wear you down. And he gets a really big, you know, really big one that derails his path. And he's so tired that he doesn't even want to fight anymore, which I think is something that we don't talk about a lot, especially in our community. Like, you just get tired, you know, you get tired of arguing, you get tired of explaining, you get tired of justifying yourself. And he's just like, I didn't even do anything. And this still happened. Like, I, you know, what do I do? So he goes into a little shell and he takes the job driving the bus for the band because he thinks this is a quiet thing I can do. it'll give me some time to read and I can like regroup and figure out what I want to do with my life. He's afraid to sort of put himself out there again. And Kale's afraid to choose. So yeah, they find themselves, I think, at the right moment in their lives, and they can support each other. And he, you know, he has a great support system in his grandfather. I loved Ray and Papa. But he also finds this new family. You know, they sort of adopt him right away. The Lilies do. It's really cool.
Yeah, I really love that family aspect to your story, because your family is who you make it, and the people that care about you and surround you with love and support. And her mother. I feel like a lot of times in Black communities where they're very prestigious and they have a, you know, reputation to uphold, that sometimes, you know, the children of those types of families aren't able to really express themselves in a creative way. It's usually the traditional, you know, the lawyer, the doctor, the, you know, the professional. And both her and her brother chose a different path from that. Mm-hmm. And you see the dynamic between the mom who's like trying to uphold these values and everything she's worked for to present, you know, Black people in a positive, professional, you know, way. And then you have this daughter who dropped out, who's decided to go ahead and pursue music and behind your back. So you find out later. So there's there's all of these different things, and finding that, like that bridge that brings them back together.
I think there is a burden that a lot of people from particularly Black and Brown and Asian communities have when you're first generation, where you, every time you step out the door, you're representing your entire community and culture. Like, it's wild. Like, it's, I've noticed that, especially being an author, because when I was in music, like, I could do 100 shows and do whatever, and but I wasn't like being interviewed all the time. People weren't going like, oh, here's a representation of a Black musician, like this being, you know what I mean, like as a Black author, it's like, look, Black author, you know what I mean. And so every interview, every book, everything I do, I feel like is under a microscope sometimes. And it's hard to like shake that off and go, I'm just gonna do what feels good for me. And I think of, I get to that point sometimes, and then I pull back, and then I go back to that point, and I pull back, you know, and because I'm a very much like, it, take me as I am or don't take me at all person. But it's hard to be that when you feel you're representing everyone, you know. And so Kayla's mom has told her, you're representing not only your family, but you're representing young Black women. And, and she's trying to tell her there's more than one way to be a Black woman. You know what I mean? But it's tough, especially like you said, when your parents have set you up with their idea of success. You know, she's got the money she needs to go to any school she wants to go to. She's got this foundation, and she's sort of like, okay, I'm going to use that foundation and build my own thing. And her mom just doesn't understand why her kids are so ornery. Like, why are you like this? You know,
I work so hard
to get you here.
In this life.
So, it's funny. Like, I don't know why I keep writing these difficult relationships between these girls and their parents. Tony's relationship with her parents is a nightmare, an absolute nightmare. Like, this was better. This was better. And Tiff's book is going to break me completely.
The Lily's got a complicated past, you know?
Yeah, they do. But I mean, that's like, again, a lot of creative people, especially in music, in the arts in general, come from complicated paths. Like, we, you know, we work through our past through whatever art, whatever medium we're using, you know?
Yeah. So how did that make you feel being a Black author and feel like you're representing? Because you said that sometimes you feel that way.
I mean, I talk to other Black authors. I talk to other authors, other BIPOC authors, and we all say the same thing. It's like you get tired of carrying the mantle, but you do it anyway because you want to like open the door for everyone coming up, you know? So people open the door for me, I open the door for people behind me, or, you know, so we just suck it up and get on with it, you know? And when we come across those like weird, awkward moments, sometimes in interviews when someone asks you a question, you're just like, you just kind of tilt your head and go, oh my gosh, I can't believe you just asked that. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Kennedy Ryan is really, really good at fielding those kinds of questions, because she's, you know, she's at the level where she is, she's being interviewed by people who aren't from the community, not out of any sort of malice or anything, but they'll ask something and you just see her wheels turning before she answers. But she's really, you know, she's a pioneer. But I've been watching Miss Beverly Jenkins for years now. in the 10 years that I've been in the business. She's such a mentor, Brenda Jackson. They're pros and they pull us aside and give us advice, or you can always like slip into their DMs and say, hey, help, you know. But I think the fact that we have a platform at all is a little bit of the progress that we've made in the 10 years that I've been in the business. So it's nice to like have our voices be heard a bit more. There's a lot more that publishing needs to do, but we've made a lot of progress, especially in the last 5 years or so. Yeah. It's just part of your career that you have to take on, whether you want to or not.
Yeah, it's a mantle we carry regardless of what we do. Yeah. Or successful at it, you know, there's such a trail of people behind you that you want to continue to open those doors for them. So they don't have to have some of the challenges that you're facing right now. You know, am I representing, you know, this particular area of focus, you know, in the best way? And but we're all going through our own journeys, right? And it takes time for us to get to where we want to be. It's a continual process.
Yeah. And I also love writing stories that show all the different ways that Black women can be Black women, you know, whether they're living and traveling in Scotland, whether they're playing rock guitar, whether they're, you know, trying to be investigative journalists, whatever it is. Like, there's sometimes I get comments like, oh, Black women would never do that, you know, from Black women. And I'm like, hon.
Maybe you
know, like, yeah, that's the thing. I really, you know, people, I guess, sometimes find it difficult to read outside of their own experiences or relate to things outside their own experiences. But that's what books are about, right? Is reading about other experiences, even when they're within from people that look like you. So,
yeah, that's the thing I think about books. We need more representation in the books, but we also need more representation in the writers of the books. And it's taken a while for that to happen, but that doesn't take away from the reading experience, at least for me. You know, even if maybe the character or the book is not a person of color, if I can be engrossed in the story, if I can really be invested, if I can really relate to the character, it doesn't matter to me what they look like, because I'm relating to the story. I'm immersed in what's happening and the development. And so reading is an escape for me, regardless of the color of the author, even though I would love to see more authors of color.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, these stories are universal. Love is universal, right? These stories are human stories. And one of the things that we struggle with a lot of BIPOC authors and queer authors will struggle with is that people think that those stories, like I get comments like, oh, I would love to read more diverse books and I really support diversity, but when I read for pleasure and I don't want to read about trauma and whatever. And I'm like, why do you think that we're writing romance? Nobody's writing trauma books here. Like, what are you talking about? But that's the perception, right? It's like, if a person of color writes a book, it has to be about the struggle, you know? And it's like, these people are just kissing and falling in love and whatever. Honestly, I mean, and yes, there may be some touches on more serious issues because that's a part of their daily lives. There's microaggressions and macroaggressions and stuff. But in the at the end of the day, it's about people meeting and falling in love and bumping uglies. So I don't know.
Or bumping beauties. Who knows?
Bumping beauties. Yeah, yeah. So
I like that.
Yeah.
I give them a little bit right there. I like it. Yeah, I absolutely agree. That was one of the questions I had to you as far as like reading for escapism versus reading a romance that also incorporates some of the things that we're dealing with on a day to day, whether it's the racism, the microaggressions, the mental health challenges, the trauma from grief, all of those things, you know, are incorporated in this book in particular, Girls With Bad Reputations. There is something about being able to relate to the character and knowing that even though this character is going through all of these things, whether or not I've been through a few of them, because I have reading, so I can see myself through the character. But at the same time, you understand that even though all of this is happening, you still deserve love. You still deserve respect. You still have to own your life and your pleasure and know that this is what you deserve in life and have that HEA at the end. And I think that, you know, stories like yours do that for us.
That's one of the reasons why I like the romance genre. And I didn't read romance until I accidentally wrote that thing on my Tumblr blog. I was a sci-fi fantasy person. I didn't read romance at all. But and you know, looking back, I did gravitate towards whatever the love story was within those books, but I didn't, you know. But I think that I love writing this genre because you can give everyone an HEA. You can give everyone that happily ever after. And it doesn't matter, like you said, what they went through, what they're going through. You know that by the end of the book, they're going to find whatever joy looks like to them. I call these books my rock and roll fantasy because, you know, they're it's like every musician's dream to go on the ride that this band is going on. But I'm not going to divorce it from the real world. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have three women of color and a very, you know, statuesque, beautiful blonde playing rock music, they're going to run into misogyny. Yes. They're going to run into racism. They're going to run into sexism, all this stuff. So,
yes,
you know, I can't write complete fairy tales, but, you know, a little bit of grim fairy tale thrown in there.
A little dark.
Just a little bit. Yeah, yeah. But, you know.
A little realism in there. Yeah.
Yeah, a little realism in there. But I try to weave those issues into the books in a way that it doesn't make it a book about the issues. Mm. It makes it a book about the love.
Yeah. Yeah. You put the love at the center of the mm-hmm. story. And, you know, it's a very slow burn.
Mm-hmm.
Very.
Yeah. Very, very, very slow burn. Yeah. I keep doing that. I don't know why. I think I miss writing fanfic. But I keep doing this. Like, Love in the Byline was a slow burn.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, okay, Zio, like, come on now. You got to give me some breadcrumbs. Like, okay, breadcrumbs, because I need to have them coming. What is going on? Okay.
But once they get there,
it's good. It's good.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. Love on the Byline was kind of like that, too. And I thought that they were going to get it on much earlier in the book, but they mm-hmm. were so determined. Well, Blake was so determined to be professional.
Mm-hmm.
But the pool scene, if you haven't read Love on the Byline, the pool scene is one of my favorite books. Yeah.
Okay. I'm all about getting wet over here with these books. Okay. I'm just going to be honest. That's what's called because, you know, I like all the rest. Don't get me wrong. I got to be invested because if it's just they're getting on right away, it's not like, hey, I came for the smut and I left for the smut and I didn't get anything else out of it. You know what I mean?
Right. And there's room for all of that, right? That's what I love about this. You can read, you can find something in any mood that you're in. There's something out there for you, right?
That is true. That is true. That's where some of that erotica comes in. And yes, Zio, I found out that you do write a little erotica and it was MM. Okay. I was like, what?
I have written erotic romance MM. I've written erotica shorts that used to be available on KU. I'm not sure if they still are. This is my least steamy series, the Lily series. And I think that's just because that story is so big, you know, and we wanted to focus on the journey of the girls and stuff like that. But it gets steamier as it goes on, I have to say. Because
mm-hmm.
book two was definitely steamier than book one. And book three
is going to have a thruple. Okay, we're going to have some.
Maybe. We'll see. We'll see if it manifests there. It might be. It might not be till Lily's book, but we'll see. But
I need some rock star, you know, reverse harem thruple action.
Okay. All right. Taking notes. I'm taking notes.
I'm just putting in my request, you know. But I'd love to see that. Yes, I would. Okay. But yeah, so erotica, wrapping up here. What made you decide that, you know, you were going to write erotica? Like, where did that come from?
I wrote erotica before I wrote anything else. 15 years ago, there was an online magazine called Oysters and Chocolate. And I wrote like a series of shorts for them. I don't even know how I found them. I was like surfing online. This is back when I was really like in my fanfic day, writing Buffy the Vampire Slayer fanfic, which was very steamy. And I was like, I could write like a short for a magazine. And so I submitted and they said, yeah. So it was like a 2 or 3 part, you know, series or whatever, which is called La Promesse now. I was just basically like these two people who meet up to hook up in a city, like they meet up at a hotel or whatever to hook up. Because they met on a plane or something. I don't remember. But it was like really just basically get together to screw. But yeah, I think I like to call what I wrote erotic romance because in romance, in regular romance, there's an emotional journey. The journey is through emotion. And in erotic romance, the journey is through the sexual congress. And so it's, you know, I can't write just pure sex. I have to have emotion and, like, you know, plot in there. So I like to say that it's more erotic romance than erotica, but they labeled it erotica. So I was like, okay, if you say so.
Yeah, because I looked on Amazon when I found out that you did that, Zio Zen, I think it was.
Zio Nin.
I was like, okay, what you got over here? I want to know.
Oh, yeah. Isn't the Alamo? Remembering the Alamo? I think that's still available. The one where they're on the rooftop in San Antonio.
I didn't see that one.
Yeah, Stranger Danger.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, like, can you send me, you know, those erotic stories? Because I want to.
Sure.
Know. Yeah. And then I want to talk to you about them because, yeah. That was fun.
Well, my MM is, I think Fast Forward is erotic romance.
I like that.
It's definitely erotic romance. Yeah.
I want to read those. Okay. Zio, I want to read them. So as we wrap up, I know I have, okay. You got a couple of minutes because I got to ask you. Being in the music industry, I know you said at the beginning that, you know, you don't like to get too deep in it, but I won't gossip for a few minutes, okay?
Okay.
What is going on with all this Diddy stuff? Like, have you been watching this?
I have no idea.
Like, you know, I don't, like, we don't, all these allegedly, whatever, but just your opinion about the whole overall drama, how everyone is like watching everything.
I can't, I just know. I think that the music industry can be really predatory, particularly on young women. There's probably a million stories that we'll never hear from prominent people who took advantage of their position. It breaks my heart because I know that these things still happen. And I wrote a book called Camden, which was about a young pop singer who's in a really bad situation and she's trying to get out of it with her management company/label. And they basically hire someone to ruin her reputation and make her seem like she's like crazy or whatever. And so
what's happening? That's what sounds like it's happening with all the stuff I've been watching.
It's more common than we like to think. I mean, there's a really famous case with the singer Kesha and her manager. And it happens with male artists too. There's a lot of stuff that comes out of the K-pop world about the things that they go through.
Oh, really?
So, I mean, look at how many, you know, unalivings we've had, you know, people taking their lives in that world. It's really sad. So I'm watching it. Hopefully whatever happens, justice will be done. But like, it's doesn't surprise me that stories are coming out. Not this particular one, but it doesn't surprise me that stories are coming out that of things that happened years ago, because, you know, nobody cared enough back then to listen. And now I think we're in a place where everyone wants to hear and support, you know?
Yeah. It's like the Me Too moment for the music industry. That's what it feels like to me.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think look at how long it took to bring R. Kelly to justice, right? You know, like,
and he was telling us, he was telling us all along.
Telling you all along. People still defend him. People still defend him. And I'm like, I can't. Celebrity is a thing. It's a drug. And I write about fame a lot and the other side of celebrity. I like writing about the, not only like how it affects the person who becomes famous, but the people around them. Everybody wants something, and it can, you know, for some people, it really changes the way that their brain works too. They start to think that they are the center of the world and that they can do anything.
You know?
And in some cases they do, they can do anything because they've got the money and the fame and or whatever to get away with it. So it's an
awakening. Cat Williams, he was like 2024 and now we're seeing this. It's wild, but I think definitely, you know, not to lighten it and make it like, you know, salacious, but at the same time, yeah, I think there are a lot of stories that need to be told, that need to come to light, because women are often very vulnerable in these situations. If they don't have anyone to advocate for them, if they're not educated, if, you know, in their youth, the parents aren't really protecting them. There's a lot that happens and it's sad. And I think this is the time for a lot of that to come out. Most importantly, I hope they get justice, all the victims. Yeah.
I hope they get justice. And I hope that the people affected get the help that they need to work through it, because you come across these interviews with people who were famous, you know, late teens, early 20s, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And now they realize things that they did or felt they had to do at the time to become famous or to be seen or whatever. And they're starting to realize that, oh, they were taken advantage of, you know, like that. Mm-hmm. That's not something that was normal.
Right.
That's a tough thing to come to terms with. the grooming. Yeah.
You think it's normal? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm over here on my little soapbox, just like watching all the stuff. I know we covered a lot today, and I think you're a very talented author. I loved reading about the Lily series and watching the women go, you know, on these journeys and find love and work past, you know, some of the issues that they're facing. You all have things that we have to work through, and, you know, it's reflected in this book. And so, Ty, I loved him. I listened to the audio book.
Ty's voice. Yeah, Benjamin Charles, who narrates Ty, actually wrote Ty with his voice in my head because I wanted him to read him. And I told Ben that, and he was like, oh my God, really? You know, like, he's really moved. And Tyler does an amazing job as Kayla. I wasn't familiar with Tyler's work, but she's really amazing as Kayla. And they both do all the other characters. I love Pop Pop's voice. Like, it's so gravelly.
I was going to ask you, okay. Pop-Pop, he sounds like... What's the cartoon? Tell me. Or the Friday. He was in Friday and he's in the cartoon in the Boondocks.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? He sounds like that when he was talking about like baking and stuff. And I was like, oh my goodness. He sounds exactly like that guy. He's like getting it in his little age. He's living his best life.
My Lily's family is full of all different kinds of people. Mm-hmm. The Lilyverse is very, very diverse.
I noticed that. Very inclusive. All right. Well, that's all I got for you. Is there anything else you want the listeners know? What you got coming up next? You know?
Well, I'm working on Tiff's book, book three, which probably won't be out for a while, but at least you know I'm working on it. And then I'm also working on the follow-up to Love on the Byline, which is a lot of fun for me. I was trying to write a rom-com and it didn't exactly come out as a rom-com. It's like a little bit of suspense in there, but I'm having a lot of fun writing this he falls first trope, which I don't think I've ever done before. So that'll be fun. And then if people want to find like me, they can go, I'm at Zio Axelrod on all the socials, except for X/Twitter. I don't mess with that. But
I don't go on there either.
I still have my account, but I haven't been there in ages. I just don't want anybody to take it. But the Lilies, they have their own Instagram at the Lilies Rock. They have their own website, their own merch, like everything. So like it can sort of like immerse yourself in the Lilies world, the Lilyverse for fun.
I love that. They got their own tour t-shirts and everything, I'm sure.
Yep. Yeah.
So I really enjoyed this conversation. I had a lot of fun with you. Well, thank you so much, Zio, for joining us here at Cocktails and Cliterature.
Thanks for having me.
And that wraps up another episode of Cocktails and Cliterature, where things got steamy and conversations got spicy. If you enjoyed our wild book reviews, author interviews, and irresistible cocktails and wines we sipped on, make sure to subscribe, download, and rate our podcast wherever you listen. Stay connected with us on Instagram and Facebook at Cocktails and Cliterature for all the latest updates, behind-the-scenes fun, and more. And if you'd like to support the show, consider becoming a patron on our Patreon page. Your support helps us keep the naughty conversation flowing. Thanks for joining us on this thrilling journey. And hey, if the world asks you why you're blushing, tell them you're listening to Cocktails and Cliterature, the podcast that brings the heat one smutty chapter at a time.